My name is Charlie Ishikawa. I am a regional public health planner based out of the Cambridge Public Health Department in Massachusetts. And I have the honor today to moderate the session with our panelists here, who I'll introduce to you in a moment. They'll then tell you their story. And at that time, when that's all finished, I'll moderate a conversation between yourselves and them with some questions and comments. And since it's a relatively small group, I imagine that we can have a nice conversation. But first, let me set the stage here a little bit to get the story ready. So, how many people here work in the area of preparedness? All right. So, by now, we all recognize the value of full-scale exercises, right? And there's lots of values to full-scale exercises. With them, we're able to test and evaluate our plans and protocols. We're able to assess workforce competency. We're also able to evaluate our organizational capability to respond. Right? And a really important value of it is that we're able to develop and enhance or clarify these relationships that we have with our response partners. And there's another value as well, which is sort of to raise the visibility of public health as an emergency first responder. Now, recognizing that full-scale exercises are so important and so crucial to what we do in public health preparedness, we've all also recognized by now that full-scale exercises are very, very expensive endeavors, both in terms of time and in terms of money, and that over the past few years, or past many years that we've been doing this work, most of our full-scale exercises have been funded by the public health preparedness dollars that come from the CDC to us as local or regional or state health authorities. Now, perhaps what's drawing you here today is this trend that we've all been seeing in this money decreasing. Now, one of the things that's then on the horizon is recognizing the importance and the criticalness of full-scale exercises. There is a risk in the future of us losing this ability to have this important tool that we use in our planning and preparedness. So how do we go about doing this in a sustainable way? Now, if you're talking about emergency preparedness in a regional context, in this context where in order to have the response capability, the necessary response capability that you need, smaller jurisdictions are going to work with one another to pool their resources in order to respond to a situation or an incident, then full-scale exercises become even more important. Because if you don't have an opportunity before game day, before there's actually an emergency, to bring these different health departments together, these different jurisdictions together, to have that capacity and to exercise it, then the efficiency of your operation on game day can suffer. And as we all know, some of us perhaps even through experience, the pooling of resources is a much more complicated endeavor than you could ever document on a piece of paper. So, this session, full-scale exercises on a dime, developing regional mass prophylaxis capacity with limited time and resources, is a story from our panelists here about a solution that they've developed over the past few years to address this very same thing. How is it that you go about doing full-scale exercises in a regional preparedness planning context in a sustainable way that's not so dependent upon the funds that we receive from the CDC or from the federal government? A little bit of background about Massachusetts. Massachusetts is made up of 351 cities and towns. Each city and town in Massachusetts has the requirement to have a local board of health, not a health department, but a board of health. Now, in this situation, each board of health and each city and town governs the activities of their own health department and also funds the activities of their own health department. So we have a situation where health departments have resources of varying sizes. We have some health departments who have a half-time employee, and other health departments that have 60, and one health department that has thousands of employees, and that would be Boston. Now, for preparedness, for emergency preparedness planning in Massachusetts, what was done is to distribute the funds received from the CDC a regional system was developed both for the planning and distribution of these funds. And you can see here on this map those different regions. Our panelists today are from Region 4B, which is the cities and towns that surround Boston. Looking closer at Region 4B, we can see that it's made up of 27 cities and towns. Within this area, this region has decided to approach the preparedness planning challenge by centralizing some of its coordination functions at the Cambridge Public Health Department, which is where I sit. Now, for mass prophylaxis planning, what they have done is all 27 departments have a template plan, which has job action sheets, and a procedural way of responding and setting up what we call in Massachusetts emergency dispensing sites, and what you all, I believe, refer to as pods, in a similar fashion. So, oh, and there's one other thing that's really important to know about Region 4B, is that all these cities and towns have signed a mutual aid agreement that allows them to exchange resources in an emergency. Our panelists are from sub-Region 2. These are the cities and towns of Arlington, Belmont, Watertown, Newton, and Brookline. Now, over the past many years, using flu clinics, they have been exercising their EDS plans, their emergency dispensing plans, their pod plans. And it began with a clinic in December of 2004. Now, those of you that remember and were in this business in 2004, remember that 2004 was a very special year because we had a flu vaccine shortage. So that's part of what drove them to come together. And the whole impetus for this, the objective, I believe, for this exercise was just to come together and actually provide a service jointly with five jurisdictions working together. Now, they followed it up with another exercise, adding other objectives that were then evaluated. Trying out the incident command system, having one town make clinical decisions and another town having to follow them. And there are many lessons learned and lots developed upon that. Then, in 2006, there was another clinic held, and this is the clinic that you're going to hear about today, where there were a number of objectives to this exercise. And again, sort of the principle here is, regardless, the service needs to be provided, a flu vaccine, but let's just take a look at specific objectives and specific points of our plan and examine those closely. Now, in December of 2007, there'll be another exercise which they're planning in the town of Arlington. So as I mentioned, it was in December of 2006 that you'll hear about, that you'll hear our panelists referring to today. All right. So this is image from Google Maps of the church where the clinic was held in 2006. And what I have here is I have a little video, a little news clip that was made as part of the exercise. One of the objectives was to exercise a joint information center and a public information officer function. So, it happens to be a very nice news clip that will provide you with good background.
Shots in a more efficient manner. They found ways to move people inside from the cold and get them into
love that we have that. So you guys can actually have see what it was like there. So again, that's the church. Alright. This here is a picture of the incident command chart that was utilized through the planning and operational and recovery periods of this operation, of this exercise. And you'll be hearing from each of these people. You'll hear from the incident commander, who is from Newton, is Teresa Wood. You'll hear from our planning section chief, who is Christine Connolly from Arlington. And you'll hear from our operations section chief, Don Sibber, from the town of Brookline. And then our logistics section chief, Jerry Cody, from the town, the city known as Watertown. So, first, we'll begin with Teresa Wood. Teresa Wood works for both the Newton and Arlington Health Departments in programs of preparedness, environmental health, and healthy lifestyles. She's a BS from the University of Florida and an MPH from Boston University in Boston. So, here you all go. Teresa Wood.
Thank you. So, as Charlie said, my position is split between the two local health departments. I assumed the incident commander role for Newton and helped out with some of the pre-planning tasks in Arlington. I've been there about a year and a half now, but at the time of this clinic that we're talking about today, it was just a few months that I had been there, which is an important point that I'll talk a little bit more about later, about how great doing something like this is in developing skills and confidence levels in employees that will be very useful in a true emergency. As incident commander, my role was to manage and coordinate activities before, during, and after the clinic. This involved troubleshooting ahead of time, and problem solving with the section chiefs both before and after. On the day of, it was walking around the clinic and being there when we needed to make changes or adjustments in how the clinic was running at the time. As you had seen from the incident command chart, the communities each assumed different roles, and this was done mostly on a volunteer basis. Newton assumed the role as incident command because the clinic was held in the city of Newton, and the other four communities were section chiefs. And all five communities and the health directors and staff who participated made a commitment to this endeavor, which I think is a very important part of being able to pull off this exercise. So the Newton parts are highlighted there at the top of the chart. We had the health director in Newton was the public information officer, and also Newton through the auxiliary police handled the security for the clinic that day. We managed this clinic through what I think we would call a loose incident command structure, which was necessary because the five health directors and staffs are in five different locations. Having to move up and down the communication chain in a typical incident command structure would have been logistically very, very difficult for us in the pre-planning task. So instead of the typical way of a section chief going to the incident commander, we made the decision that if there were problems and discussions that needed to be had ahead of time, that it was okay for the section chiefs to talk to each other while keeping me in the loop. And this was done by phone, by email, and everyone was able to communicate with each other, both before and during the clinic. So that was an important adjustment that we made in order to be able to pull something like this off. We met in person several times during the pre-planning process of the clinic. I had telephone conference calls and also met at the location where the clinic was held and set up a day ahead of time. Most of the work was done when we initially started to decide to do the clinic, and the bulk of the tasks ended up primarily in the week leading up to the event. This year we're actually condensing everything into a roughly two-week period. We're not actually going to start planning until next week, so that we're able to condense the time frame and make it a little bit more realistic approach to doing during a real emergency. The staff time was, of course, an in-kind donation and also the volunteer, so it wasn't like we hired anyone extra in order to do this clinic. We did have specific goals, and the goals were set based on the evaluations that were done in the previous two clinics and tasks that we wanted to test for this particular clinic. We did have an evaluator who helped us out and tracked them for writing an after-action report. I'm going to go over these very briefly. The planning section chief will go over them more in depth during her presentation and also during the evaluation discussion. So there is an emergency dispensing site action plan that we used, and we were wanting to test that out. ICS, for those of you who have used it, know that it doesn't necessarily go exactly like they say it will when you sit in the classroom and have to learn it and take the test. Using it so that the tasks that are assigned to each role come intuitively is something that's important, and that was one of the things, just by using it, we were able to test it and learn it a little bit better. With REST Communication, we did have a joint information center that was in Cambridge, and I used the information center to test some risk communication goals, particularly with getting the word out about the clinic. With respect to special populations, we primarily focused on languages and recruiting people whose English wasn't necessarily the language that they spoke at home. Behavioral health, we did incorporate people who assumed the behavioral health role into the clinic. And also we had some visual signs, which you saw in the movie there, which we were piloting at the time and have actually now been produced and are being used in all the 27 communities in our region. But at the time, it was one of the first times that they had been used. And they're great because each community was able to select the languages that it wanted the signs translated into as well. And finally, the Medical Reserve Corps. Some of the communities have their own Medical Reserve Corps, and we also have a regional Medical Reserve Corps. So it was the deployment of the Medical Reserve Corps that we were testing, and this was the first major time that we were able to bring the volunteers from the many different communities together. Combining five different communities and health departments with their different practices was no easy feat, especially when you're dealing with things like liability, getting paperwork signed, and operating under standing orders. I have a couple of stories from things that happened to us during the pre-planning and execution of the clinic that I wanted to share with you. So we were able to use Flumis, the intranasal vaccine, through a grant from MedImmune. MedImmune provided the Flumis. In order for us to receive this grant, one community had to actually sign the agreement to adhere to the rules that MedImmune had set forth for the Flumis, which were mainly just the population who we could give it to and not actually charging people to receive the vaccine. Nothing that was a big deal, but still it had to be signed by someone. We considered this a supply task, and Jerry Cody was assuming he began the task of having this agreement signed as the logistics officer. But we soon realized that because Watertown doesn't have in-house counsel as part of its town, they contract out for it, their lawyers tend to be a little bit more, look at things more carefully. And getting something like this signed quickly wasn't going to be something that happened very easily. So we looked for another community with who might be able to get it done a little bit more quickly. And we had that agreement signed in Arlington, and the vaccine was shipped and arrived in plenty of time. So it wasn't necessarily exactly the way things were supposed to happen through incident command, but this was the way that we learned to work with the resources that we had in order to get the goal accomplished, which was getting the Flumis that we needed for the clinic. In previous years, the nurses who worked at the clinic operated under individual standing orders that they usually worked under for flu clinics. For this and in previous years, some of the nurses from other communities weren't actually able to participate. Newton specifically wasn't able to participate in the clinics that were held in Watertown because they weren't allowed to cross over into another town in order to work. They weren't covered liability-wise. So this was one of the good things that we were able to use the mutual aid during this specific clinic, and all operated under one specific set of standing orders, which was signed by the town of Belmont. So we were working through those, and that made things go a lot more easily this time. Additionally, this clinic was very useful for training employees and getting everyone to learn to work together and learning to use the Medical Reserve Corps volunteers. As you've seen, Massachusetts has a pretty unique public health structure, which forces us to come up with a few more alternatives than the more typical county system many of you might be more familiar with. However, I wouldn't want you to think that this is something that would only work in Massachusetts, because I think it applies to other communities, whether it's counties, cities, towns, hospitals, and health departments coming together, because the basis is many different entities collaborating by bringing the resources that is able to bring. This is everything from supplies, staff, the actual building where the clinic was held, and being on a first-name basis with the partners who you would be working with during an emergency. The cost for this clinic is low because each health department contributed supplies that it was already purchasing and working with for a regular flu clinic. The clinic was held after the more typical vaccination periods of October and November, so we were able to use remaining state-supplied vaccine for the clinic that might not have otherwise been used. And we also received the flu mist from MedImmune, and we're lucky this year because the state was able to purchase flu mist, so we're still going to be able to provide that for our clinic this year. Other supplies were contributed in kind, like the auxiliary police or volunteers, so we didn't have to pay for a police detail. And evaluation was provided by the Institute for Community Health, which is a group that typically evaluates emergency preparedness programs within our region. And we gave flu and pneumonia vaccine to nearly 700 people. It was on a Saturday, and most of the people who attended were not elderly. Nearly half had never received a flu shot before, so it was a great public health service, both in what we were able to provide and what the employees and staff who worked at the clinic were able to learn from the experience. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Teresa. Next, we're going to hear from Christine Connolly, who is the planning section chief for this operation. Christine Connolly is the Director of Health and Human Services for the Town of Arlington. She's been working there and employed in Arlington for 8 years. She has a BS in biology from St. Anselm College and an MPH from Boston University. Christine?
Hello. Thank you, Charlie. So as Charlie mentioned, I was the planning section chief, which those of you that are aware of the ICS system falls right here where the yellow box is. And through the planning section chief position, I worked closely with Charlie, who is our moderator, as well as the evaluators from the Institute for Community Health. And together, we were able to get through each of the duties that were required through the planning section. So here are the duties that we had to complete for this task. First, we had to develop a timeline for the duties. We developed a traffic plan for the outside of the building, because obviously if we can't have everything coordinated on the outside of the building, people will just drive by and they won't stop by for their flu shot. We also had to develop a clinic flow plan, and that was another duty of the planning section. We organized the vaccine types, quantities, and lot numbers, which is very important when you're trying to track who gets the vaccine and which lot they're getting in case there's ever a recall. And then we had to develop the evaluation plan, and as I mentioned, the Institute for Community Health, which is our regional evaluator team, they developed that plan. And we had to obviously evaluate the exercise. So the timeline. We drew up this timeline just to sort of outline. We really started our planning in November, and it went through, obviously, our clinic was in December, and we did the evaluation throughout the month of January as well. So we did a operations planning, we did mobilization and recovery. As you can see, the dates are outlined there. This was the task sheet that we drew up through the planning section. And basically, what we did was we took each of the section chiefs and drew up what they were to do throughout the entire process. So beginning with the pre-planning time, where basically in November before we had the clinic, throughout the operation as well as after the operation. So as you can see, we broke down the duties for each of the sections, and that was, again, one of the planning section duties. The traffic plan. the traffic plan, we worked with the auxiliary police. That was the free group that was in the city of Newton. We met them the day before, and we drew up the plans. We drew the arrows as to where people were going to drive, and there was a ton of parking. Of course, the morning of, and again, this clinic was at a church, the morning of on a Saturday, there was a funeral, which threw a whole set of extra circumstances into our plan that we had. Another issue that came up, the auxiliary police, who were to be put at various stations throughout the parking lot, had shown up late, so we were really thrown for a loop at the point when the clinic was to open. You know, we had the designated officer locations, and you know, we had areas for signage, but we didn't feel as if it was appropriate to put signage up when there was a funeral going on. So, you know, obviously it's something to think about if you're ever doing a clinic in a church. There's obviously going to be something that happens no matter where you are. You just have to figure out how to adapt. And we were able to do that. So again, we drew up the flow plan. So this is the flow plan that's within our emergency dispensing site action plan, the plan that we all have within our health departments in the event of having to run one of these clinics. We just pull this off the shelf. This plan, this flow plan was specific to our clinic here in Newton, where we were giving out pneumonia, flu mist, and flu shots. And this will be reviewed in more detail by the operations section, but planning drew this up. And then this was the actual clinic. Again, this is just the map of the clinic. Dawn, the operations section chief, will go through it in more detail. Just wanted to show it as one of the duties that the planning had ran through. The vaccine. Again, we received vaccines through the State Department of Public Health. We had all pooled extra vaccine from our clinics that we had earlier in the season. We pulled them all together. And we got flu mist from MedImmune, as Teresa explained. So we had 10 different lots, because again, this was at the end of the season. We had all of these different lots from all of these different, and all of these different types of vaccines. So we had thimerosal free for 6 months and up. We had vaccine for 6 months to 3 years. So we had a lot of different types that was left over from a lot of different departments. And then we had a lot of different vaccine lot numbers as well. And so the planning section developed a technique to track each lot with each shot that was drawn up, and we did that through colored labels. We used markers and basically labels from printers, and we wrote the lot number and the vaccine type, and we just went through and colored the labels and put them on the vaccine boxes as well as the bags, and we broke the bags up into groups of 50. And then again, Teresa mentioned that we had some exercise objectives, and these are the exercise objectives that were drawn up. These were the seven points that we were trying to hit for this particular clinic, and I will get into more detail later on as I go through the planning evaluations.